Astra Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astra Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure as always, Nick. So today we thought we'd do something different. Commodities are in the news, and here at Astra, we actually spent a fair amount of time digging into details of the commodity markets, going through fundamentals, USDA reports, that sort of thing. And so we thought we would take a little survey of the commodity markets and what we see going on there. So we can start with the global factors for the commodity markets. Now, commodity markets are a little odd because they're sort of a residual category, right? Like, so all stocks are kind of the same, right? They're shares in a corporation's future earnings. All bonds are kind of similar. You're supposed to get a payment, but copper and corn don't have anything to do with each other, right? They're just left over after you've sorted everything else and they throw those into the commodity market bucket. So the sub-commodity markets are a little bit more coherent. So you can think about the energy markets or the grain markets, but even there, there's a lot of differences, idiosyncrasies between one market and the other. But overall, you know, we tend to see that one thing is the stronger the world economy, stronger the commodity markets. And we definitely saw that play out in 2020 as the world sort of fell into a hole. Commodity markets dived with crude going briefly negative, which is fascinating to those of us who've been playing these markets for a while. So this year, while we see the future growth being strong, it may be expectations for 2022 might be slowing down a little bit. And if that continues, I guess we wouldn't be surprised to see that play out in broad commodity market prices as well. Another thing that we tend to notice is that most commodities are priced in dollars, they're invoiced in dollars. That is, even if Japan is buying from Korea, most of the time they will price that deal in dollars. So the stronger the level of the dollar, the more expensive commodities are for the rest of the world. And so things being equal, a strong dollar means a weak commodity market prices. And the dollar has been appreciating a little bit in the last several months. So those two factors, I would say, it's a little hard to gauge them. They have been supportive and are now getting less supportive. So if you're interested in the level or if you're interested in the direction, you might come to a different conclusion on those. As far as the specific markets, we thought we'd jump into probably the most interesting market today, which is the natural gas market. I know this is one that you tend to follow, Nick. What are you seeing in the natural gas market?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, natural gas is something that we follow quite closely, but it's only recently really picked up sort of mainstream news in the past week or two. And the story there is really not so much the domestic U.S. natural gas market, although that has certainly gone up quite a bit over the last year, but really further afield, and particularly in Europe, who are sort of facing constraints on both the supply and the demand side. So on the demand side, Europe has sort of led this shift away from coal and also nuclear energy and is increasingly turning to renewables, but also natural gas to supplant some of that baseload that was previously in non-renewable sources. They've really had quite a significant uptick in natural gas demand over the past several years. And that has coincided with supply issues, things like decreased supply from Russia via pipelines. And so the background thesis there for some people, though I'm not entirely sure I buy into it, is applying political pressure for the expedited approval of the new Nord Stream 2 gas line. And so those factors have sort of coincided. And as a result, the storage in Europe for natural gas is quite a bit lower than it should be at this time of year. And there's this potential for a very cold winter in Europe and very tight natural gas supplies. So that's sort of where things stand currently.
Yeah. So in a typical year, so we're still in the build phase, right? So basically from late spring to early fall, you tend to build natural gas inventories, then draw down in the late fall to the winter. So your storage tanks in Europe are typically about 90% full in this week. And this right now, they're about 72% full. And that's a big decline. So people are worried that if you get this and a cold winter, that's trouble. And so we've seen some incredible movement in the liquid natural gas markets, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't have the figure on hand, but if you look at the European natural gas contract that everyone follows, it's up some astronomical amount. You probably know it.
Yeah, it's up 400% year to date. Well, I'm sorry, 392%. I exaggerated. While in the US, the November contract, which is the active one today, is also up 100%, which is plenty. But the supply, the prices for liquid natural gas are very high. And so the story there is that basically that's how you import additional natural gas into your country is, you know, you can get the pipeline, but if the pipelines are full, you're not coming through there, then you have to ship stuff by tanker. The world has made a lot of progress in the infrastructure for liquid natural gas over the last like 5 or 10 years, but those markets tend to be more expensive. And yeah. So we see, it's interesting. So if you look at the price of natural gas in the US compared to the price of natural gas in Korea or in Europe, you'll see the foreign countries' natural gas is way more expensive. But at the same time, US natural gas is expensive relative to domestic fuel oil or relative to the component gases that you can break it up into, right? So you can break up natural gas into propane, butane, and ethane. And so that's the so-called frac spread is saying that natural gas prices are too high relative to its component gases now. So it's interesting there, but it's definitely being pulled up by people looking to export more.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I think that you've touched on something very interesting, which is the international aspect. So you've recently had China say that it's directing its domestic suppliers to really buy natural gas at really any reasonable price. You've seen increased demand.
I think they said unreasonable prices too.
Any unreasonable price, right? You've certainly seen increased demand in the rest of Asia. And then there's also sort of export constraints with these liquid natural gas terminals in the US being full up and also more demand domestically, which also hurts exports.
Yeah, so it's not clear that the price could go infinite and you get any more gas flowing, right? Like if you could be totally filled up, the LNG terminals could be filled up. I'm not sure where we are in that stance, but like we only have so many ships and so many terminals. So there's a limit to how much can get moved. So I mean, I don't see the US prices going up to 5 times what they are now, which is like they are in Europe. So also in the energy markets, you can look at, in general, the petroleum-based energy markets, crude oil, heating oil, and gasoline have been going up this year. Those are all up about 50, 60% year on year. And what you see there is if you look at all the inventories for all those products together, you see a huge spike in inventories starting in March 2020, which shouldn't surprise you. That's when the crude oil went briefly negative. That spike lasts for, I don't know, like 2 or 3 months, and then it's been deteriorating. And so basically what happens, so the natural commodity cycle is prices get expensive, people drill a lot of oil wells or plant a lot of cocoa trees, then all those projects come online at the same time, and prices get cheap, and they stop using the oil wells or whatever. So this happened again, always happens. And so inventories went from being extremely high in the second quarter of 2020 to being very much on the low side of the way they've been the last 6 or 7 years today. And so that is one of the reasons for the oil prices going up.
John, do you have a sense of, I mean, we've talked a little bit about world growth and demand, and that's pretty intuitive. I wonder how much of these price climbs have really been related to COVID-related factors. And by that, I mean, for example, in the UK, not being able to find truck drivers for gas, things like that. Do you have a sense of how much of that is the story versus just demand coming back online?
I would say the US truck driver problem is not a COVID problem. I would say that's a Brexit problem, right? But in general, there's, you know, the typical supply-demand dance, where you have prices went down a lot, and so you have sort of supply destruction, and so then prices go up a lot, and you need to get demand destruction from it. But like with everybody flush, like you don't get that demand destruction, so you're trying to lure suppliers back in the market with high prices. And I'm not sure exactly how you could divvy up responsibility for that between, you know, COVID and other factors.
Sure.
Also worth mentioning is the grain markets, which are strong across the board. There's 3 main grain markets. There's soybeans and their related products. There's corn, which is corn for cattle, not sweet corn for eating, and wheat. Those are all 10, 15%, 20% on the year. They were up more a few months ago. So there the story is fairly low levels of estimated year-end supply. So these estimates come from the USDA, which basically monitors basically the whole world and their anticipated grain demand. And those levels have been very low, for especially for corn and soybeans. Soybeans is still quite low. They're improving recently, and then we've got some positive numbers 2 days ago saying that the situation isn't quite as bad as it usually is. And this is actually kind of a pattern with the grain markets, where you get a little bit of bad news, the market extrapolates that out to a terrible year. And then when you turn from July to October, they're like, oh, the yields actually aren't as bad as we thought they were going to be. So we've seen the pattern this year of very strong prices for grains into the summer and coming off the boil recently as the year-end supply either stabilized or is not getting worse. Before we end, I'll just mention quickly the meat markets for the markets for cattle or hogs. In calendar 2021, we've tended to see some pretty sort of bullish indicators in both those markets. Basically, that when you look at the supply of hogs in particular, that seems to be low, or when you look at the supply being low, meaning prices will be high, and that's been holding up pretty well. The cattle has been an interesting situation where one of the things you can do is look at what they call the packer margin. So you look at the price of a cattle future versus what you can sell the meat for, right? So you calculate the various cuts of meats you'll get from the cow and add that up. And that number has been treading up steadily. And to that extent, that's been a support for most of the year for the prices. But on the other hand, so that's one margin, right? So if you buy a cow, you can sell the pieces of the cow for more than you paid for it and more than typical. On the other hand, like if you look at the feeder margin, so basically like you buy a young cow, you feed it for a year, and then you sell the cow, like that number is not super strong. So those two things are kind of pointing in opposite directions. And in general, the cattle market has been doing a little bit worse than the hog market recently. And it'll be interesting to see if that continues to happen. Great. And I think we'll wrap it up there. I think next week we will go back to our normal coverage of the week's economic data. And until then, if you are missing economic data, you can look at the Aster website, asterim.com, or reach out to your Aster rep. You can also download the Aster Research app off your favorite app store. And until next week, take care. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state, where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.